We are.
Careful of any strangers coming down the hallway with extending batons. Watch your knees. God.
Listening to Gloria. I thought it was an ABBA song, but it's not an ABBA song.
It is not an ABBA song. No, it is not.
I watched it three times. I was like, ABBA. Okay, they're, I probably should get into them at some point.
ABBA. Well, this is Mike, and Oscar. I am your host, Mike. This is my co-host, also Mike.
I am also Mike.
And we're doing I, Tonya today for our Oscar Sprint profile. We're going into the depths of Margot Robbie playing the role of Tonya Harding and beating up Nancy Kerrigan.
Grammatically punctuated.
Yeah.
In I, comma, Tonya.
It's a big year for punctuation in a movie. You have mother with the exclamation point.
But that wasn't capitalized, though.
No, well, it's true. Yeah, Aronofsky needs a grammar class, I guess. But yeah, we're doing I, Tonya. That's where we're at today. Big heavy hitter as far as awards. It's up for a couple big Oscar awards. We already got its nominations out there in the precursor shows. Two acting trophies that we're going to get into that this one's kind of staring in the face and trying to grasp at. Nice cast, great performances, a weird movie for
weird
me.
Weird movie.
Yeah, it was very bizarre, and I don't know how to digest it, but we'll get into all that.
I'm going to be less definitive on this podcast than I've been. Like, usually...
Well, it's not a definitive movie.
Right. Usually I have so much written down and I'm super duper ready. Like, this movie I watched three times and I'm just blank stare at the end of it. Because I can't take good notes and it's...
It's so coy. It's like, did this happen? Like, that's how the whole movie is. We'll get into it, like we said.
This podcast could go any which way.
Yeah, this is going to be a good one. Before we get into the production profile and we get into all the mess about I, Tonya, we keep teasing it. We like giving shout outs to people that interact with us online, all the strangers that talk to us, so to keep Mike and I from talking to ourselves nonstop, we wanted to give a couple
we
of shout outs.
Anyway.
Yeah, we still will, but we wanted to give a couple of shout outs to people that interact with us and tell us their thoughts and wanted to give them a little publicity and thank them. Our Star Wars post, we'll start there. Our Star Wars two-part recap of The Last Jedi got a lot of play on Facebook. We had Robert R. Aparicio that said, terrible movie with the thumbs down emoji.
Ooh.
Yeah, was not a fan. Then Andrew Frank Rubio followed that up with the poop emoji, saying a poop movie. A lot of people not liking Star Wars.
My brother just saw it again with me this weekend, and he didn't like it.
Really?
Dave didn't like it.
That's all right. Everyone's entitled to their wrong opinion. Hey, Run Sam. The movie was disappointing. Snoke should have been a manifestation created by Ben Solo since he wanted to be like Vader. It would have been interesting if he created an emperor figure to motivate him to be evil, and since he's strong in the forces, his Jedi powers projected Kylo's imagination of his split personalities to life.
Wow.
Interesting take.
He should be a guest on the podcast.
Somebody that actually goes deep into the thoughts of Star Wars. Why not?
Look, we're big guys, and Dave's a big guy, and I sat abreast of you and Dave in between the two of you and liked the movie despite, you know, the most uncomfortable. I think we got to go to those theaters with the leather seats that are spread out.
Nope, I want to sit right on top of another man, human being next to me.
Arguing, the silent argument with the elbows of who gets the armrest.
I want to walk out of a three-hour movie having a Call Me By Your Name type relationship because of my physical proximity to another large male.
But yeah, I mean, me and Dave were definitely on top. Maybe that pissed him off because he liked it the first time he seen it.
That's weird. It's an odd.
Let's have an entire podcast on how our family members likes the movies we rewatch.
Ed Brown, last one in the Star Wars post that just put up a GIF or a GIF if you're one of the grammatically correct people like we just talked about.
Is it a GIF or a GIF?
I thought it was GIF, but I always say GIF.
It's a G-off.
Yeah, this is the never-ending
is
battle.
Is it GIF
or
G-off?
Ed Brown putting up a gif of Luke drinking the blue milk that he had just freshly gotten out of that cow animal, vertical cow's teat, whatever that thing is.
That vulture, fat vulture sitting on the mountain.
That made me laugh. We'll go to Twitter. We had a couple interactions with some people over the last few weeks. Francois Denoy, my apologies if I mispronounce that name. She's at Aurora Knits. She gave us a listen. She joined us. She's now a follower of our podcast. We encourage everyone out there, if you're listening, please subscribe, like, share, get our names out there. We would really appreciate it. We know, like we always say, this show lives and dies on the backs of you guys. Most certainly did listen to the podcast. Really like your thoughtful discussions. Very well articulated. So look at that. We get
straight
a little
up pat on the back.
Yeah.
There's a golf clap right there.
Yeah. Good. Thank you. We appreciate that. Appreciate any sort of love. So that's where we're at. We're getting a lot of likes, getting a lot of comments, getting a lot of people out there interacting with us, which is...
How was your holiday dinner table feedback amongst the family and friends?
I don't talk to my family.
and during the new year. Like, mine was good. I got a lot of other family members saying, you know, pat on the back, nod of the head, made eye contact with me for a change.
First time in years. Good. No, that's good. Yeah, so maybe you're allowed back in the house at some point. That'd be nice.
You didn't yell at me, "You're ruining this family. I have no son.
Tearing this family apart, Lisa."
None of that this year.
No, good. That's good. So you're allowed to say your last name again in public, huh? So again, we appreciate any kind of love. If you want to get at us on social media, we would love to hear from you. We love giving you guys shout-outs. We love interacting with you guys, having civil discussions, keeping the curse words to a minimum or a maximum. It depends how you feel. We can get under your skin. We know that. We're full of hot takes.
Hang in any kind of social media conversation. Yeah,
you want to get at us, we would love to hear from you. We are Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Facebook, Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Instagram. We are MM&O_pod on Twitter, Mike, Mike, and Oscar @gmail.com. Someone reach out to us. You never know what could happen. Maybe we'll have a whole discussion about the diatribe and the conversation between the two of us on the show here.
You never know. We're single. Sparks could fly.
That's exactly what I'm looking for. But today we're discussing I, Tonya, the biopic of Tonya Harding and her incident with Nancy Kerrigan.
In quotes, biopic.
Yeah, a really odd movie. Just an incredibly bizarre movie, and we'll get into all the reasons why. We'll start with a production profile like we always do. Mike's going to start us off here.
So the screenwriter Stephen Rogers had his niece over, and they began watching the 30 for 30 about Tonya Harding that came out a couple years ago. Yeah, that was a fun 30 for 30. I wish I could have got my hands on it to rewatch before the pod, but I didn't. Try to make it up for it on YouTube. Still, not at the same quality. You know, watching the E! True Hollywood Story and the hard copy from 15 years ago. Yeah,
hard copy.
It wasn't as good.
It's amazing how hard copy, like, it was what basically news is now.
It was a great line. They made by Bobby Cannavale.
Bobby Cannavale, man.
I freaking love him. Yeah. He was hysterical in this movie. Anyway, screenwriter Stephen Rogers sought out Tonya Harding's life rights, and when he called the number listed on her website, in regards to this, it was a Motel 6 that picked
Good
up.
Lord.
So from there, Rogers said he was so in, quote, so in. So he wrote the script on spec and then kind of figured out the rest of it later. Margot Robbie originally came into contact with the script in terms of her production company, Lucky Chap Entertainment, which at the time, in I think it was 2014, it was on a mission to find female-driven entertainment. So a noble cause, and she's a real pioneer,
throwing her money around, getting pictures industry. Made for herself. Good for her.
Robbie thought the script seemed to break every rule. She had never heard of the real story. I mean, she was like two or three when it happened. She was younger than us.
Ugh,
and
well, then we hate her now too. Put her on the list.
Put her on the list of people too good looking and too talented at too young of an age for us schmoes to be accepting of. No, she was 4 years old when this all happened with Tonya Harding in 1994. So Robbie was shocked when she learned it was all true. It was too good, you know, to pass up. She got director Craig Gillespie, reached out to him via his agent. And when the agent called him saying that he had a script for him about Tonya Harding, Gillespie almost cut him off. You know, he had just done $1 Million Arm with John Hamm and didn't want to do another sports movie. But then the agent said, starring Margot Robbie. So
there it is.
Yeah, Gillespie, like, didn't speak and then got the script sent to him from there.
Starring who?
Margot did 5 months of training as a figure skater before the shoot.
That's one of the biggest things I took away early in this movie is, man, is that actually Margot Robbie? And it turns out, I mean, she had two body doubles, but it was her for the most part doing
some of it was her.
Ending. Yeah.
Some of it was bad CGI that made her look like a Harley Quinn face. That was just too shiny and white.
Well, they tried to, when you slow-mo a triple axel in a skating movie and you don't have a skater, it's going to look a little odd.
It didn't. Some of it worked really well, and some of it was bad. So that was hit and miss for me. It's going to be one of my worst scenes, honestly.
Fair enough.
I will not let you get
it. I was overly praiseful, and then you just shot it down. That's just, cool.
We don't speak before we speak on camera, on radio. Anyway, Stephen Rogers wrote the role for Alice and Janney. Both of them knew each other for years and years. They go all the way back, as my bio of Janney will say, all the way back to an acting company in New York City out of college. He had written a bunch of roles for Janney over the years, but this is the first time they actually worked together.
Interesting. Another phenomenally talented actress.
Janney figured that Rogers wanted her to find the humanity in the character, who does such cruel and terrible things throughout the movie.
Nope!
I'm gonna have a lot to say on that. Yeah. Janney often jokes about, why would my friend write this role for me? What does he think of me now?
It's from a place of love.
Anyway, Alice and Janney could not find LaVonna Harding or LaVonna Golden, the actual person, and interview her before the movie. So when they questioned Tanya, who they did get an interview with, she didn't know where the mother was and didn't care, and said that she hadn't spoken to mom for like 4 or 5 years or years.
Yeah,
she said.
You can tell the strained relationship. It's sad to hear about and watch.
Sebastian Stan tried to get a hold of Jeff Galooly. He never answered his calls. And then eventually, after the project kind of gained some steam,
after they hear Margot Robbie's attached.
Well, Stan really stalked him down and really tried to just spend a lot of time and effort trying to get a hold of him. And Galooly eventually was kind of eventually he gave in. But initially, he was like disturbed they were making the movie. But eventually he embraces it because it's like a dueling point of view, this whole script structure between Galooly and Harding.
Yeah, but it's not like he's made out to be, you know, he doesn't look great.
It's amazing because the opening screen titles say that this movie is based on wildly contradictory interviews between Tanya Harding and Jeff Galooly.
Yep. Sure is. I imagine that's going to be mostly in the spoiler section, but can't say it enough. Bizarre movie.
So yeah, during promotional interviews, Margot Robbie mentioned that she finally bonded with Harding in their meetings when Tanya talked about her kids and her husband and her new family. It does say during...
That's what people forget. Like Tanya Harding, and she in the Margot Robbie portrayal says it outright in the movie. Like she's become a punchline. You forget she's an actual human being. Like she has feelings and emotions, and she's a person.
I'll try to include some of the information I gained watching Tanya Harding, like where she is now. I watched a couple YouTube videos of TV segments,
Oprah
interview. That's all up there online. So if you want to know, it's there for you. Listen, the film was written from the perspective of the unreliable narrators in a kind of mockumentary style of a biopic.
I don't know what the hell this movie was.
Yeah, Jeff Galooly and Tanya Harding, like I said, they were interviewed for only a couple hours each. It wasn't like they were involved heavily in the screenwriting process. It's amazing because you watch all that stuff on YouTube, the True Hollywood Story is available. They have compilations of all the news footage, and you see the real interviews with Galooly, the real interviews with Harding, the real interviews with LaVonna Harding that make it into this movie, and, of course, the real interviews of even the friends, the accomplices of the crime, and the mastermind behind it, your favorite
dude,
Sean Eckert, who's now dead, who they couldn't interview.
No, he's not. He's as dead as Tupac is. That man is undercover. Deep Six. He's part of the deep state our president just referenced on national TV yesterday or the other day.
That dude is eating in every single scene of this movie.
He is the greatest character in any movie this year.
Eating in every scene. So the real bird during the interview of Alice and Janney, was really pecking at her ear and stuff, pecking at her hair.
I had a feeling that wasn't scripted.
And she rolled with it and kind of just stayed in character and kind of yelled at the bird, which probably made the bird come at her more, knowing birds.
Yeah, for those of you who haven't seen it, Alice and Janney, like we said, plays Tanya Harding's mother, and she's giving an interview throughout various parts of this movie, and she has an actual bird just perched on her shoulder the whole time, sitting there.
Yeah, so I'll jump right into the cast and crew here. Director was Doug Gillespie. He's Australian-born. Mr. Woodcock, Lars and the Real Girl, The United States of Terror, 6 episodes of that. The newer Fright Night with Colin Farrell, Million Dollar Arm and The Finest Hours composed the majority of his filmography. The writer of I, Tonya is Stephen Rogers. He is responsible for Hope Float, Stepmom, Kate and Leopold, P.S. I Love You, and Love the Coopers.
Yeah, another guy that doesn't have a whole lot of work in the last 10 years as far as directorial goes.
Yeah, I mean, he was an interesting choice. The Lars and the Real Girl compared to this movie, like,
yeah, this is different.
So he's talented. I mean, he's got some versatility. Margot Robbie is Tanya Harding. She's also a producer of this movie. I'll give you a brief biofilmography of her. Born in Dalby, Queensland, on the Gold Coast of Australia. Her mother was a physiotherapist and dad owned a farm. She grew up on the farm with three siblings. Robbie started working at 10 years old at a restaurant, and by the time she was 16, she had three jobs. She moved to Melbourne full-time after going to Somerset College to pursue her acting career. She graduated young from college. She worked in Australian TV and spent 3 years on a soap opera before moving to L.A. in 2011.
And then she found a rocket and strapped it to her back and has gone onto the freaking stratosphere.
Robbie won the role on Pan Am as a flight attendant. It was an attention grabber, even though that show didn't make it.
No, they keep going back to the well with all these network TVs about airlines, too. I mean, the L.A. to Vegas just came out with Dylan McDermott. All right.
Or Dermot Mulroney?
Dylan McDermott Mulroney.
In 2013, she grabbed a small role in About Time, the time-traveling movie that was made.
About Time?
About Time. It was made like a ripoff of The Time Traveler's Wife, et cetera, et cetera. But then she nails her breakout performance when Martin Scorsese casts her in The Wolf of Wall Street.
Just.
Good God.
Yep.
Lucky Chap Entertainment is founded in 2014 as her production company. And she's going to be a producer on upcoming projects, Marion, about Maid Marion, Robin Hood character, Gotham City Sirens, which is like a made-for-video where she's Harley Quinn in that, Dollface, Terminal, and Dreamland, which I think are original projects. Robbie's been acting in 2 to 3 films a year. Some highlights include Z for Zachariah, Focus, Suicide Squad, Goodbye, Christopher Robin. And yes, she's announced to star in a standalone Harley Quinn movie. She's also announced as Harley Quinn in a Joker movie.
Which, I mean, the Harley Quinn movie, I believe, only got off the ground because she put her money there. I mean, she funded it, is funding it in part herself because, I mean, Suicide Squad got such tepid reviews and had such a tepid reception. And she said, no, screw that. There's money in this character.
Yeah, she might be right, and I hope she cashes out there. Mary Queen of Scots is the most recent movie she's filmed. She filmed it with Saoirse Ronan. And yes, Suicide Squad 2, Quentin Tarantino's 1969 movie. She's rumored to be involved with both of those.
Yeah, I think at one time she was attached to be the Sharon Tate character. Don't quote me on that because that's
no. You're right. You're right.
Was it Sharon Tate?
I think she was the Sharon Tate character. So, I know Jennifer Lawrence and Margot Robbie have both been involved there. I don't know. I'm rooting for one of the two or both somehow.
But, yeah, it's interesting because everything she seems to be attached to or is in the process of making, you want to see a good Harley Quinn Joker movie or Harley Quinn standalone movie. You want Suicide Squad 2 to be good. You know, you want the Tarantino movie to be awesome.
She was one of the lone bright spots, the Suicide Squad, for sure.
Yeah, and she's well, and that's funny, too, because she was the feature in Suicide Squad when it was the first previews of it came out. And,
right.
And even there, she wasn't, carrying the movie. She was a big part of it. Mm-hmm. But she wasn't, there was Will Smith, there was the Joker, the new Jared Leto Joker that people wanted to see. This movie, it's it was on her back and her shoulders, and it's here's your chance, Margot, to carry a film.
The problem is they don't give her enough agency in terms of her superpowers or should be like a clever trickster hero.
Yeah.
Instead, she's just doing things with the bat at the end of the movie.
Right.
So it's just nonsense. Like, you can't be clever enough to write her into the story and make a story around her. You got this great star. In that movie, just why do a couple people with guns and bats need to go and disable the super alien monster with the bomb underneath the whatever it was?
Because Viola Davis said so. Like in all things in life, how do they get done? Because Viola Davis declares them to be done.
It's hard to disagree with Viola Davis, but I do after that movie. Listen, Margot Robbie wants to direct and write at some point in her career. She doesn't know when.
She's on her way to being a studio head. I mean, this woman is going to be a big fixture in the entertainment industry for a long time.
Angelina Jolie's doing it now. Yep. I wouldn't be surprised. Sarah Polley's become a really great director after a long acting career. So, yeah, I mean, I'm just going to give Sebastian Stan's filmography. He is Jeff Galooly, the husband of Tanya Harding. He was in Rachel Getting Married, Hot Tub Time Machine, 11 episodes of Gossip Girl. He was in Black Swan, and he's Bucky Rogers in Captain America the First Avenger, Ant-Man, Captain America Civil War, and the Avengers Infinity War. He's also been in The Martian, The Bronze, Ricky and the Flash, and Logan Lucky. That's Sebastian Stan.
Yeah, this is like the farthest removed from that Bucky Rogers character that you can, I mean, you do not see a Captain America type character
was,
in this
movie. It was jacked up for Bucky Rogers.
Yeah, he was, I mean,
unless he's wearing a bodysuit and he's like a skinny dweeb in this movie.
Yeah.
I want to be a skinny dweeb again. And the mother of Tanya Harding, LaVonna Golden, LaVonna Harding at one point, is played by Allison Janney. I'm going to give a brief biofilmography of her as well. She is a 7-time Emmy winner. I'm not going to bury the lead on that. She is the beloved CJ Craig from our formative years as a member of the cast of The West Wing. Yeah.
She was long walk and talk shots.
Yeah, I mean, she's got some huge highlights on her career already, TV and film. Raised in Dayton, Ohio. Raised in
Can you take me Ohio?
You've made a lot of bad jokes on this podcast before. I've made a lot of worse ones. That might be the worst joke. Imagine if we get sued off the air from that stink bomb. Dayton, Ohio, born and raised, daughter to an actress and jazz musician turned real estate broker. Actress mother, jazz musician father. Anyway, it's been reported that she had dreams of becoming an Olympic figure skater, but she runs through a sliding glass window at the age of 17, seriously injures herself, cuts tendons, and...
Don't do that. That sounds like a bad idea.
That it was a bad situation for...
Sounds like something that probably won't end well for most people that attempt it.
So get this. She actually graduates the Hotchkiss Boarding School in Lakeville, Connecticut. That's where she goes to high school.
Holla!
And then she goes on to Kenyon College in Ohio, where she studies under Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward, who I guess are like guest professors at that school.
Not bad teachers, if you're going to be an actor.
Janney goes on to the Neighborhood Playhouse in NYC after college. Apparently, she performs with, get this, Dermot Mulroney. Or it might have been Dylan McDermott.
It was one of the two. It was both of them.
Nobody knows.
It's like Venom from the Spider-Man. We are Mulroney'd.
The writer for I, Tonya is also a member of the company, Steven Rogers, and they got to know each other back when. Shocking to learn that like Margot Robbie, Allison Janney started out in soap operas before getting TV movies, TV bit parts. Everybody seems to get a role on Law and Order at some point, all the actors that we profile.
Yeah, that's like the gatekeeper. Once you make it on Law and Order, you can go on and have a fabulous movie career.
Once you're a rapist or a rapee on Law and Order, yep. Then you can do anything.
Right this way.
But anyway, she gets some juicier small parts and... The Ice Storm, Primary Colors, Private Parts. She meets Aaron Sorkin during the Primary Colors.
That ended well for her.
Yes, it did.
It went well.
And 1999 becomes her big breakout year. CJ Craig begins her walking down those West Wing corridors in the West Wing. And she appears in 10 Things I Hate About You. And she is Chris Cooper's comatose wife in American Beauty. Scene burst onto for Janney.
Yep. Yeah, she's always kind of had her name attached to big, big projects, whether on TV or film.
Yeah, just to go through some of those over the past 15 years. The Hours, Finding Nemo, Strangers with Candy, Hairspray, Juno, Away We Go, The Help, Get On Up, Spy, which she's hysterical in.
Yep.
Tallulah, recently put on Netflix, The Girl on the Train, kind of an epic flop. But she's one of the major detectives in that movie. Like I said, she's won 7 Emmys. She's been nominated for 6 Golden Globes, never won one of those. The Emmys are 4 for The West Wing, 1 for Masters of Sex, and 2 for Mom. I kind of went through her filmography, not necessarily her TV shows, but she's been a lot of TV shows as well. Big time TV shows.
Yeah, Mom is a big hit. It's kind of taken the reins from 2.5 Men there as one of the leading comedies on CBS, and that's still going strong today. She seems to, I mean, I know you said she's only won a couple Emmys, but she seems to win the Emmy every year for Mom in a bit of an upset, so which is, at least that's how it registers in my mind.
1 year she won for both Mom and Masters of Sex, and I think it was 2014.
She's a phenomenal. She's gorgeous, too. Another phenomenal actress. People way more talented than us.
The rest of the cast of I, Tonya includes Julianne Nicholson as Coach Diane, Paul Walter Hauser, Mike's favorite, as the always eating and
give
scheming.
Give him the Oscars! Just all of them.
Sean Eckhart, Bobby Cannavale as the hard copy reporter Martin Maddox, Caitlin Carver as Nancy Kerrigan, and Bojana Novakovic as Coach Dodie Teachman.
Yeah, so there's your cast. This is the people that made I, Tonya come to life.
So to get into some production notes, principal photography began in January 2017 in Macon, Georgia. The Macon Coliseum was used for, I think, all of the skating sequences, even though they did some exteriors at the place in Detroit, et cetera, et cetera.
And they did a good job of making you feel like you're in a different aspect every time.
Yes, arena. Yeah. I mean, Tonya Harding doubles for Margot Robbie on the ice were Heidi Munger and Anna Malkova. Skating doubles. The choreographer was Sarah Kawahara. She was a major figure skater back in her day.
Famous, too. I was reading up about her. She was apparently in charge of the choreography for one of the Olympic opening ceremonies.
She's really?
She did work on Blades of Glory with Will Ferrell. She's a big name as far as figure skating choreography goes.
I wonder why Tonya Harding couldn't get, like, a choreographer gig, you know, after she got banned from figure skating forever.
The world just keeps kind of kicking dirt on her.
It's going to be fascinating when I go over like the rest of her career after. Like from 23 on. Like her life ends at 23, but then what else she does is
it's a trip.
Amazing. Because she was a producer, Craig Gillespie, the director, had Margot Robbie involved in watching dailies, and she was heavily involved during the editing process. So by the premiere, like everybody asked the star, like, this is the first time you've seen the movie? She's like, no, I've probably seen this movie 5,000 times over the past few months. So she's heavily involved.
She's what every young starlet should aspire to be, someone like her. She's a great role model.
Like I said, the bird really was a pain in the ass during the Alice and Janney scene.
The most unruly cast member.
The most by far. They did test screenings to focus on whether or not they should have Tonya point the finger at the audience and basically call out all the fans and all the public over the years and say, you're my attackers too. And it played terribly. Like, people were vehemently against it, and yet they left it in.
It's not wrong. I mean, look, people don't like seeing their masks revealed. You know, their masks come off, and we'll see what's underneath sometimes.
Robbie said, you know, look, they might hate it. You might hate it. You might hate this movie that we're putting out there.
Right.
Throughout the promotional interviews, she said that.
And it certainly fits with the character construction that they did in this movie as far as what Tonya is.
So, yeah, I mean, the balls for them to do that. Last little nugget here is that during the test screenings, the audience would ooh and ah after the Dove bars were shown. So that after the Dove bar scene where the husband kind of makes amends after doing terrible things to her, Robbie watched audiences commiserate with the Galuli character. So she said and many times that Sebastian Stan was just a mesmerizing actor and somehow made this character empathetic to people, but also she was just shocked at how the audience would forgive the Stan/Jeff Galuli character.
So maybe it's not that the audience didn't like the finger pointing scene. Maybe they just had a bad audience.
Maybe, yeah. Who did they screen this to? Anyway, you got the specs, Mikey. Do it.
Yeah,
to
let's talk about some specs in box office with I, Tonya. As Mike said, written by Steve Rogers in the last 10 years, has only written P.S. I Love You in 2007 and Love the Coopers in 2013. Directed by Craig Gillespie, as Mike also gave us. Debuted September 8th at the Toronto Film Festival and went wide in the U.S. on December 8th. Neon Pictures Distributors, not a distribution company that I was all that familiar with prior to this.
Right.
$11 million budget. It is $2.55 million domestically so far. Good for the 171st highest domestic grossing film of 2017.
It's just opened limited so far.
Yep.
It's going to be a major platform release that's growing and growing and growing. I think it will go wide at some point. Another movie we're getting ahead of. Look at us.
Well, I mean, it should go wide. It's got the appeal. It's got the A-list star.
The story's got Oscar, I mean, yeah. Look at what the OJ Made in America.
Exactly.
OJ, you know, on the FX.
People love nostalgia. They love bad people.
Hint, hint, hint. OJ is involved with this movie as well.
A 7.7 IMDb rating on just over 7,700 reviews, 90% certified fresh Rotten Tomato rating, a critic's average score of 7.9 out of 10 on Rotten Tomatoes on 154 critic reviews, audience score of 86%, and an average audience score of 4 out of 5 on 4,600 plus reviews, and a 76 Meta rating from Metacritic. So it's well received. It's getting critics and audiences alike, except apparently for that test audience that they threw it in front of.
Right. The Metacritic score is a little bit alarming, and the IMDb for that matter. It's not in the 80s like most of the other Best Picture noms that we've studied and contenders that we've studied. So that's a surprise.
Higher than Star Wars.
A lot of critics have it like high A. Like they give it high A grades. I was shocked.
Well, that I don't think it's worthy of either, because you can't be satisfied with the full picture of this movie in terms of the narration.
What the flick they have. Like somebody gave it a 98.
No, that's
like,
not.
I mean, those are bigwig critics in that show. Like the owner of the Warriors is like.
That's why you got to listen to us. Talk about its awards chances and some of the awards that it's up for. It has 3 Golden Globes nominations, and the Golden Globes will be coming out soon if they haven't already by the time you listen to this. Supporting actress Allison Janney, lead actress in musical comedy for Margot Robbie, and Best Picture musical or comedy. We talked about before the chances of a Best Picture musical or comedy being nominated for Best Picture at the Oscars. Not too high, but who knows? This movie could be up there.
Mm-hmm.
2 SAG nominations again for Janney and Robbie. 5 Critics' Choice noms: Best Hair and Makeup, Best Comedy, Best Supporting Actress for Janney, Best Actress in a Comedy, Robbie, and Best Actress, Margot Robbie. So Margot Robbie kind of...
double nomination.
Definitely gonna. You would think she's going to hear her name come nomination
win
time.
One. Maybe they'll split it. Makes sense. So we'll have a recap of the Globes and the Critics' Choice Awards at the end of next week. We're live tweeting the Globes.
That will happen.
We'll talk to each other during the Globes. I don't know. We'll see.
So it's not going to shock you to hear that this picture is considered a serious threat for 2 of the major Oscars, Best Supporting Actress and Best Lead Actress, obviously for Allison Janney and Margot Robbie, respectively. Only 10 films in the history of the Academy Awards have been able to secure both awards with performances in the same movie. 1938's Jezebel, 1939's Gone with the Wind, 1942's Mrs. Minerva, 1951's A Streetcar Named Desire. Stop me if you've heard any of the titles of any of these films before. 1962's The Miracle Worker. 1966's Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. 1976's Network. 1987's Moonstruck. 1993's The Piano. And the last time such a feat happened, 1998's Shakespeare in Love, where Gwyneth Paltrow won the Lead Actress Award, and Mike and Oscar favorite Dame Judi Dench procured herself the Supporting Actress Trophy.
Wow.
So this is, you know, hasn't happened in 20 years. It rarely happens, but it has a chance to happen with both this movie and Lady Bird.
I think one of the two is going to win for sure, but we'll see. I mean, this is another one of those abrasive movies, Mike. You know, will the Academy vote for characters?
A lot of bad
that are,
characters this
that are
year.
Evil
it's
characters
be
or that are complicated characters that do bad things? We'll see.
So this movie obviously does have a chance to be truly record-breaking and enter rarefied air for award-winning films. Does it have a chance to actually accomplish this? Janney seems to be in a better position to win the supporting actress, where Robbie would seem to be the one with ground to make up in order to win her category, but supporting actress is loaded this year. Right now it's either Janney or Laurie Metcalf.
Both actress categories loaded, in my opinion.
It's true.
Yep.
No denying that as I, Tonya hits more theaters, Margot seems to be gaining favor along with momentum amongst critics. I think personally, just, you know, without going into expectations and without going into what we thought about the movie.
Just go into your expectations and tell people what we thought about the movie.
Good point. Fine. Structure the show around. Do it your way. For me, it's between Margot Robbie or Frances McDormand so far for the best actor. I don't think Sally Hawkins matches up.
Yeah, I would agree, and I think Laurie Metcalf and Allison Janney, those are the big 4 right now. But
if
we'll
not
see.
Mary J. Blige for Mudbound, I could definitely see her getting...
Can Sally Hawkins be the compromise candidate that wins over those 2 just outstanding performances?
You don't need to.
To me, Margot Robbie and Janney, they're nominees in any year. McDormand's probably the same.
Although
and
I
Metcalf's
will say, I mean, Janney, it's another one of those things where if you didn't know, like what... Franco went through in portraying Tommy Wiseau in The Disaster Artist. If you didn't know that character in real life existed,
right,
it would almost be cartoonish.
It would feel like a caricature.
Right. But she does, I mean, for as everything you hear about Tanya's mother, she played it well.
They do show a couple interviews at the end of the film.
You know, it's no joke.
And they do have, you know, on YouTube interviews with the mom that you can watch. And yeah, she's quite the character in her real life. Yeah. a persona.
Yeah, so I'll start with expectations.
Well, I got to do award projections.
Fine, do it your way again. Mike's going to give us some Gold Derby stats and award projections. How is this movie stacking up and looking?
Yeah, Feinberg Forecast has it as a front runner for Best Picture, Actress, and Supporting Actress, Robbie and Janney. It is a major threat in original screenplay, cinematography, film editing, and makeup and hairstyling. Gold Derby has it up for only 2 out of the 27 critics as a Best Picture nom.
That's what I was going to say. I'm surprised Feinberg has it up there for a Best Picture.
And this is getting even weirder. Only 19 out of 27 have Margot Robbie in their top 5 for Best Actress. 0 number ones. That's just shocking to me.
Hopefully it's a case of the Titanic, where as it gets wider and wider and closer to Oscar time, people are going to start wrapping their heads around it.
I mean, they got Hawkins and they got McDormand up there. Anyway, Best Supporting Actress, Allison Janney, 26 out of 27 have her up for that top 5, and 7 people have her at number 1.
Sounds about right. It's going to, you know, Janney, Metcalf, Mary J. Blige. I think Holly Hunter. I mean, we saw how she was treated by the Globes.
Octavia Spencer's involved in the mix there. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to get those 5s on paper, set in stone, and then we can debate them, because there's a lot of loaded categories this year.
January 23rd, that's when those Oscar noms come out. We're only a couple weeks out.
So yeah, Mike, expectations. I mean, I had super high hopes for this movie. I thought the trailer was hysterical when it came out.
Yeah, this is not one of those that you're going to question why it's a comedy. You know, like you could see the questions as to why Get Out was positioned as a comedy at the Golden Globes. This is not one of those. This has very funny moments and laugh out loud parts.
Even still, there's some heavy dramatic scenes, like you said. But yeah, no, there's no question. This movie makes you laugh. It's designed to make you laugh. It's very pointed in terms of its use of the mockumentary style. Mm-hmm. The fake interviews with the characters years later, aged up, that start off the film and that splice into the narrative structure. So it's almost like you're watching reenactments of, you know, obviously you're not, but it's watching reenactments, and the structure is kind of in that bizarre worldview where fourth walls are broken. A lot of walls are broken.
It's so weird. It's presented as a mockumentary, like you say, so it's basically these flashbacks done against the backdrop of these interviews of Tanya and Jeff Galooly, and the Sean character is only shown through an evidence tape, you know, for his interview, because he's in jail. And then you're in the scenes, and you have these Goodfellas types fourth wall breaking, where the character is speaking directly to the audience.
He's literally yelling at the audience, "I didn't do this, yeah, Margot Robbie."
Yeah,
you know, cracking a bizarre shotgun.
So I did not expect that structure.
Right.
I also had high expectations going into it, because I was excited to see a Margot Robbie picture. I wanted to see how, you know, with the full weight of the production on her shoulders, how she would pull it off.
And I will say I enjoyed it quite a bit. So how about, do you want to tease your review?
I think I liked it. I don't know. I mean, it's so weird. It's so weird because you don't know what is actually happening. Like, you're watching half truths,
right,
and maybe some expectations, and maybe some stories, and maybe some things that actually happen, but you're not given any differentiation between the three or four, which is done on purpose, because the two main characters that this story is coming from tell such conflicting stories of what happened.
I saw it last night, and I want to talk to you about it now, and I want to watch it again tonight. It's just one of those movies you could really rewatch, I think. And,
high rewatchability for sure. Yes. Whether or not you enjoyed it could come down to a different question.
To transition to some production values, a review of those, I would say Sound to Sight here, because that soundtrack is hit and miss for me.
A lot of things
in the production values are hit and miss, but I've been doing nothing but listen to that soundtrack
that
the last
soundtrack
2 days.
Is awesome.
That Hot
it's
Chocolate
so
song. They didn't just do sexy thing, people. Hot Chocolate with Everybody's a Winner Baby, or whatever that song's called. I'll sing a few bars. No, I won't. But that soundtrack, I've been listening to that Spotify playlist on loop for like the last 2 days.
One of the first scenes when we have, I mean, the first scene of Allison Janney taking a child.
Woman.
Oh my God, she's a devil woman. I was laughing my ass off.
It's kind of funny. It's super on the nose, and a lot of critics have complained about this,
but it should great be songs. Because there's so much, like you said, caricatureness about these objectively ridiculous people in ridiculous circumstances.
They must have shelled out a lot for this soundtrack.
You would think. I mean, Bad Company, Shooting Stars on here.
You know, Fleetwood Mac.
Steve Miller Band. Yeah. I mean, there's some big songs.
A who's who of the classic rock world.
Now, that said, it's not like there's a lot of original composition going on with the soundtrack or the background music. I mean, there's some, but there's not anything you hear. The things you're going to remember that you hear from this movie are already established songs from the 80s and late 70s.
Yes, they blew out the budget for the rights of these actual big bands.
Yes.
Now, so jumping into the sight categories, visual effects, I didn't love. Like I said, the CGI faces are too shiny during the skate. It was distracting to me. I was upset about that. The more I watched it, the less it bothered me, to be honest. So I was able to think, like, okay, maybe that's the best they could do. They made a choice. Like, if we're going to hang in the master shot of this amazing athlete pulling off all these real life moves, they have to basically CGI the face and put Margot Robbie's over it.
Right. And you're right, there are some times that it is stark, but I would say I'm more forgiving of that because you and I are big sports guys, and growing up, I think we were like 7, 10 years old, something like that, when this actually happened. I can remember those costumes that they put her on.
Right.
Like, they struck something in my mind. I was like, holy shit, that's Tonya Harding. You know, I mean, like, they nailed the costumes for me and what I remember.
That's true. I mean, and here's the other thing in terms of the performance. Like, if Margot Robbie, even after 5 months of training, were to go out there and do some things on the ice, the best of her ability, it wouldn't
look... You're not going to touch an Olympic-level skater.
Yeah. I'm going to get into it in spoilers, but where Tonya Harding is now at 40-something years old, going on the ice now and still
would
doing...
Would still smoke, yeah.
Watching her compared to everybody else...
Would still smoke
in the public, it's just absurd what she's still doing. And
now, that said, I thought the CGI involved in the skating, I wasn't that crazy negative about. I thought they pulled it off well. And there's certain times you could tell it's actually Margot Robbie when she's landing a triple, like coming off the triple axel stuff like that.
Oh, right. The slow motion stuff you're talking? Yeah. I mean, that was good.
There was stuff that's forgivable and stuff that wasn't that bad. So I wasn't like taken aback by it.
But think about it. You watch the real Muhammad Ali and you watch Will Smith throw a punch. It's like
tough.
Night and day.
Right. I mean,
like,
it's not close.
The real Muhammad Ali is bigger, number one, and his hands go so fast, and you watch Will Smith punching around. I mean, he's doing his best, but it's not even close.
It's a tough... Anytime you're dealing with a sports movie with a big... I mean, you know, for say what you want about Tonya Harding, the person, but like, there was a time she was the best in the world at what she did, you know? And so to replicate that with an actor on 5 months training is going to be tough.
The director was a little ignorant. I think they all were a little ignorant of it too, because they trained Margot Robbie for 5 months, but then they really didn't use her a lot. They used the stunt double more often than not, because I think they just realized the disparity of what anybody can do after a short amount of time training and realize what these professionals do, what these Olympians do. And they even thought like, let's go get figure skaters who can do the triple axel.
Yeah, just like that, huh? Let's go down to your local rink, you'll find them.
There's only two women in the world right now that are doing it, and they're both, you know, training for the Olympics.
Right, which are coming up.
They would not do a silly little movie, just a silly little movie, but they would not do that.
Your point is well taken. It's like, it's not... And maybe it is ignorance. I mean, look, it's like if you and I were to make a movie about downhill skiing... I mean, we're sports guys, but we don't know what the hell the ins and outs of downhill skiing are, you know?
We would cast Hugh Jackman as a mentor.
Good Lord.
I didn't like that movie either.
Oh, you think?
Egerton.
Hugh Jackman rolling off the top of a slalom didn't do it for you?
No. Anyway, the costumes, the hair and makeup, what did you think of those? You feel like you were in the 1990s?
Loved it all. I thought it was great. I thought they nailed... The Janie getup, where she's sitting on the couch, the outfit she has, and then when they cut to the end and show the real video of Tonya's mother,
right.
It's like, wow. It was really striking for me. I thought they nailed her.
Yep.
I thought they nailed... look, objectively speaking, Margot Robbie is a beautiful woman.
Right.
And to have her try to look... Her and Tonya Harding, not to say anything about Tonya's physical appearance, but they look starkingly different. So they did all they could with Margot Robbie. I thought they did as much as they could with her to make her look like Tanya.
Hollywood always pretties up the cast a little bit. It's just impossible not to when you have all these just otherworldly actors that just spend look like golden gods.
Yeah, around like teams of people with makeup and hair.
Real schmoes, yeah, like the regular people out there. So that happens, but I agree. This feels like the 80s and 90s. It looks like small town America. They feel like rednecks, which like, Tanya proudly states she is.
Yeah, they keep saying it. That's what they are.
And they look
are.
Like the real people. Galooly looks like Sebastian Stan. I mean, Sean in the movie looks like real life Sean, even though real life Sean is like 6'2", 6'3", or he's a bigger, much bigger guy, taller guy.
Well, he has to keep changing his height because that's how he stays undercover. He doesn't want to be able to be seen by lame folk.
So we've jumped into some of the performance reviews already, but yeah, what do you think of is it? Are they worthy? I mean, we both kind of said
Margot Robbie deserves the momentum she has right now, and she deserves to be nominated. This is a top five performance of the year.
Of any year, in my opinion, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's really good.
Here's the problem. Does it get points off from some people because it's so emotional at times? She's such a fighter at times. And then again, it's a bit abrasive. It's in your face. They're calling out the audience.
And it's the same reason. Like, okay, you're saying something that I want to say about Allison Janney.
Right.
Because, like, it's almost like, how can someone, you know, she's playing it too wild because nobody could be that heartless and have that much disdain for their own daughter.
Right.
But it happened. Like, from all accounts, that's what these characters were. So it's not like you can take away points for them portraying the figures that exist.
Well, I think they had to make a decision. They were either going to be a 30 for 30 style, have that eye in the sky, that objective, omniscient narrator,
yeah.
Right? And try to get to the truth of what happened or go subjective with it. And they went subjective with it. They went, I'd say, either Tanya's or Jeff's POVs.
Now, deciding to do that, I think, in my opinion anyway, should cost it points as a movie. Because it kind of becomes too meta at times, and it kind of becomes a mind fuck, for lack of a better term, as to what you're watching and putting together. I don't think you should take away from the performances for that.
Here's the thing. Like, the whammy moments are the breaking of the fourth wall for me. Like, when when Margot turns and talks to the camera, it's hysterical. When Bobby Cannavale, as perhaps one of the more objective characters in the movie, when he says anything, I'm in stitches dying laughing. So that's with three viewings.
I don't disagree. I think that's not what I mean when I say the movie should lose points, because I think what you just hit on.
But those are like those are the highlights for me. When
but
this
I
movie
think that has
wacky.
More to do with the performances, because the way they portray those lines and the way they act those lines and point through those scenes.
Yes and no, because it's structured into the and it's a crescendo on the scene. Like you have to set up those jokes. So Cannavale. Cannavale's pause,
so
some of his lines,
movie.
Just to how he pauses and then laughs, he just kills me.
I mean,
anyway,
he's not Alec Baldwin and Glengarry Glen Ross, like he's not that impactful, but he's so good in every scene he's in.
But I will admit and plead ignorance on a lot of this still. This is a movie I want to study.
We're going to talk about in spoilers, there's more in that this movie is coming out and that it's an anniversary for this attack and what happened. There's more coming to light just today about these events. And we're going to get into those in the spoilers.
If you watch E! True Hollywood Story, you get a different, and this is from 10 years ago, but really 15 years ago. It probably came out a year or two after what in 1994, what really happened. I didn't get a date on when I watched.
Mike, 94 was 24 years ago.
where have all the cowboys gone? I don't know why that song popped into my head. So listen, this movie was a long time ago.
Gotta tell you, in my preps for this episode, didn't have that in my notes.
If you watch this movie made me like go back and listen to music from the 90s and 80s and 2000s.
That's one of the high points. This I can't say it enough. The soundtrack,
Spotify playlists. I just let the playlist play. And
willing to bet that song wasn't on the playlist.
No, it probably did. It popped up. It did. Honestly, it did. So I have an eclectic taste. Or what's the opposite of eclectic? Anyway.
Sad.
Sad. Just very sad. So I guess to just, you know, maybe punch each one of these performances with a final thought, I think Allison Janney played a role like she was like her character was trying to disprove reverse psychology as a working concept.
I didn't know where Allison Janney, what her motivation was. Like, if you hate your daughter, which she basically admits to doing, that's fine. But then she still lives vicariously through her because she's willing to dump all this money into her, every penny she has, essentially.
Well, it's one of those characters with a very stark dimension to it, because she, yeah, on the one hand, she's an alcoholic, completely disenfranchised, completely upset at her own status, you know, definitely living through the dreams of her child,
right,
like the dreams deferred. She's got this poker face with her daughter in many ways, and she acts all angry with her treating young Tanya terribly. And then there's always, what I noticed in each of the big three scenes, there's a slight facial gesture that Allison Janney does. And the kind of the early scene where young Tanya's on the ice and she pees her pants.
Yep.
Because of the mom, and that's one of the first scenes of the movie.
Yeah, that's
not a and she actually does the loudest of those versions where she goes, oh no.
Yeah.
But that's just a little thing where she tells the audience that she's kind of putting an act on for her daughter.
She's not devoid of all emotion.
But she's really upset, and she's on her daughter's side. And then, you know, she states why, and kind of flushes that out as the movie goes along. So it's interesting. My favorite scene involves Allison Janney. I'm going to get into that in spoilers. I love the fact that she kind of antagonizes not just the people on the ice, but the people off the ice as well, the coaches and the fans.
Yeah, like, it's hysterical. So weird. Like, she's Tanya's biggest supporter, but at the same time, she's her biggest enemy. It's just...
So to talk about Margot Robbie's character, one final punch, did she win the Oscar with that scene in the mirror?
Now, I have it in my notes that she enters the eye acting only Hall of Fame, along with Tom Hardy's performance in Dunkirk, with how she is in this movie. There is so much strain and emotion and just pressure exhibited in her eyes before every routine in that scene in the mirror, like you just talked about, that you could just be like, holy shit, this is a woman on an edge that's trying desperately to keep everything together.
Yeah, so those meta scenes, those, you know, Oscar reel scenes are there for her, especially in that scene in the mirror, like we said.
I guess to answer your question, though, does she win the Oscar? Man, it's between her and Frances McDormand for me so far.
Here's my argument in her favor. And again, we got to keep rewatching these movies.
Yes.
When she's around her character, Tanya Harding, when she's around Allison Janney's character, Allison Janney is the type A personality. She's the dominant personality in terms of their characters, right? So Tanya is forced to do the subtle performance. I mean, Robbie's forced to be in the role where she's just moving the eyes, like you said. She's got the subtle gestures, so she's got that quiet performance. And with Stan, she's got that quiet performance that's always a powder keg that lashes out, right? So you got that another level. And then when she's on the ice, she is in command.
Control,
she
yeah.
is the dominant personality. She's the dominant, you know, movie star-like persona that Tanya Harding has, never mind Margot Robbie.
Right.
And she owns this every scene, steals every scene, owns every scene. So she's got those three types of scenes in this movie, and she pulls them all off. So I think it's the most versatile performance of the year. The question is the quality consistently high enough? Is the movie good enough? Is the character something that people will be empathetic enough about or sympathetic of? I don't know.
We're going to see. Time will tell.
Sebastian Stan pulled off some purple turtlenecks.
He pulled off a lot of looks. A lot of looks. You know, this was firmly in the early 90s.
That's my last. Purple turtleneck was my last note. So let's go to spoilers.
All right. Let's hit the dance music. Let's do it. Spoilers ahead.
This is a spoiler warning.
Spoilers. 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 Spoilers.
Mike, and Oscar Sprint, spoilers!
All right, Hope you did your floor routine and your freestyle skate to that music. This is the spoiler section of I, Tonya. If you want the non-spoiler section, if you want to hear what happened at the box office, production profiles, performances, you've come too far. Go back and listen to the first 50 or so minutes of this podcast. From now on, we're going to talk about all the twists and turns, the entire plot of I, Tonya, taking in full. And I think we could start with best scenes, right?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Go ahead. What was your best scene?
I love the LaVonna and Bobby Cannavale interview cutaways. Those were hysterical, like I mentioned. I also loved all the fourth wall breaking. I thought they punched every scene with those. That was funny as hell.
The one you talked about in the non-spoiler where Tanya's chasing him with a shotgun and then breaks the fourth wall and tells the audience that she never did this. This is just a wild accusation by Jeff Galooly.
What made me laugh the hardest, though, was Jeff Galooly's turn to the camera during his sentencing, and he's like, it turns out that even though I didn't admit to planning the whole thing,
I didn't plead guilty, but it turns out that if you buy guys and pay them off and have them go do something and you know about it and you don't turn it into the police, you're culpable.
We just totally ruined the joke. You stepped on the joke and killed it like a bug in the ground. But darn it, that was really funny. And the whole sequence of the hit on Nancy Kerrigan I thought was hysterical, and then, like I said, they really time the mockumentary cut-ins really well. Mm-hmm. Bobby Cannavale summarizes it, like, of all the boobs in this story, these idiots pulled it off. I was dying laughing. The best scenes for me are twofold. The triple axel sequence was really moving, and for them to re-show that sequence, that actual routine by Tonya Harding at the end of it.
And as true to life as it was phenomenal, yeah.
It was great. During the credits, they re-show Tonya Harding skating the real skate from those nationals, which she won. But I love two more scenes. Her old coach coming to her outside of the diner. Great scene. And then the last one, which is finally my best scene. I'm sorry, because I liked a lot of scenes in this one. My best scene is when Allison Janney asks her boss at the diner to just watch Margot's face at the end
That's
of
it.
The
I have
Nationals.
That on there, yep.
And that was my favorite moment of the movie. Again, she's not being watched by her daughter, so she kind of shows her true colors. I think that was true to life.
What was your interpretation of that scene?
My interpretation is that she really loved her daughter in her own way. She's a terrible, abusive person, and I think it's more complicated than just saying that, all right, demonize a person who does bad things, even though they should pay for it in terms of, you know, full extent of the law prosecution. However, this is a complicated character, and Allison Janney played it to a T, and to actually have Margot Robbie just be on a screen there pulling off one of her best expressions of the movie on a small screen at the top of the diner, you know, that was just awesome by the both of them.
Yeah, that was definitely a gripping moment in the movie, and I think there's a lot of ways you can go with interpreting what that scene meant, because I kind of thought it meant more that she might have been disappointed in Margot Robbie or Tonya having such a joy in what happened to Nancy Kerrigan, but I could be totally off base there, because it looked like Tonya was so genuinely happy, and it could have been misplaced disdain on Janny's part.
Janny gives the closest thing to a smile in that scene.
Yeah,
that scene.
I think you're right.
Also argues with the her boss that she has to see her daughter's face after her daughter has the best routine of her life, pretty much.
Yeah, I think you're right, but Janny is such an odd character. This whole movie is odd, like we keep saying, because it's just told with the fourth wall breaking, saying that this really happened, this didn't really happen. It makes a tough timeline to kind of for you to watch.
I still want to study it. I agree. Because most of the first act is in Tanya's POV. Then it's kind of a POV between Tonya and Sebastian Stan. There's a sequence that's entirely in Sebastian Stan's POV after the FBI is onto him, but then there's also Sean Eckert is the front and center of some scenes, and of course the two hitmen.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they really do a great job, and they play with point of view.
I'm like you in terms of having a couple favorite scenes. One of mine has to do with the built-in drama and the did it really happen or didn't it? It's when Tonya and Jeff have had their divorce.
Right.
And Jeff hunts down Tonya at her new locale now and wants to give her back a bag, but really it's just an excuse for breaking in the door, and he ends up pointing a gun at her.
Oh my God.
And there's this big dramatic scene of your ex-husband is pointing a gun in your face, and what's the background music during that? It's like happy and uplifting, like the most objectively dramatic scenes, the things that should be filled with the most drama in this story, in this movie, are treated like, you know, just they're not given any weight because they're just, everything about these characters is so dramatic and so heavy at all times.
I don't mean this in a negative way, but all the domestic violence shown in this movie, it almost desensitizes you to it.
Yeah. Because it was just such a part of everyday life for them. And something like that, where it should be this big dramatic moment, it should be this cry, heartbreaking, gripping, dramatic scene, and you're given this, oh, it's just an everyday thing. It's just another day.
And again, a lot of this is accusation, and Jeff Galluli at the beginning of his interviews and what he's always held to is that he wasn't abusive.
Right.
Was he not abusive. The mother said she hit her with a hairbrush once. Mm-hmm. Tonya Harding has been pretty consistent in interviews that I watched from 95 all the way back to 1980s. Like, she was interviewed at the Nationals in the 80s telling people that her mother was abusing her in the late 80s. Good God. How do they not have, like, records of this, like, at, you know, in the police records from the early 90s where she apparently calling the police on her husband all summer? Well, like, she mentions that at one point.
I mean, yeah, after she's famous, you wonder why there's not more to do about it. But
this guy's firing a gun in a hotel complex, it's grazing her face, and the cops see her covered in blood.
Just let her go.
And this guy is able to talk himself out of that? Are you kidding me?
Did it happen? Who knows? You know, did it happen like that? That's not for us to say. It's not for the filmmaker to say. It's almost as if these such big dramatic things happen, and it's like nothing's ever supposed to actually go wrong. Like, these are just hotheads acting out and kind of wanting to, not having control of their emotions. Mm-hmm. And then when something does go wrong, it's like, wait a minute, what the hell just happened? And the biggest scene for that, another one of my favorites, is when Janny and Margot Robbie are arguing over the kitchen table. Janny throws a knife, just trying to like get some anger out, and actually ends up sticking in Tonya's arm. And the music stops, the dialogue stops, everyone just stops, and they stare at each other like, well, that wasn't supposed to happen.
And when Tonya throws her skate at her first coach after she fires her, it actually, she feels so awful about herself then.
Like, not,
you
like, know,
you could see it on her face.
These are, they're not the most, they're very layered people, but they don't have the most depth to them in that they, you know, everything seems to be pretty black and white. There's supposed to be a beginning, a middle, and end to everything. And when something goes off course, there's like, they don't know how to handle it. Literally, it makes them stop in their tracks. Those were two of my favorite scenes.
Worst scene. For me, it was the CGI. I already mentioned it. I also didn't like the fact that they kind of stayed so long on the two of them when they were 15 or 16, 15 and 20, whatever their ages were when they met and had their first date. Even though those are good scenes, it's just, she's obviously in her late 20s. Yeah, he's obviously in her. As beautiful as these two actors are, they're older than 15, 16. Yeah,
it's very jarring. I mean, that's probably my worst scene, too. That first shot of her where she's supposed to be this teenager with bangs and braces.
Like, the mannerisms work. Yeah, the mannerisms are funny.
But just, it's this grown-up person that's obviously wearing fake braces. Like, what are we doing here?
Well, that's why I get this like feeling like it's like almost a reenactment of
maybe that's, you know,
I know it's not that, but you know,
maybe it's purposefully poorly done in that aspect or purposefully cartoonish. Another thing I just wanted to hit on as a theme throughout this movie, I don't know if it's the best scene. It certainly made the Tonya character more reprehensible to me, because just personally, I find issue with people that can't take blame for their own faults. But everything, all of these characters in giving their interviews, everything is someone else's fault. You know what I mean? Like, Tonya says it on the nose a bunch of times. That's not my fault. My lace broke during the 94 Winter Olympics. I guess that's my fault, but it's really not. Everything is someone else's fault. And that's why these happen. These things happen. We're all, you know, we're good people. Everyone else is the problem.
It's tough because there's a lot of things I believe her about. And I like I said, I did a deep dive over the weekend. I watched probably 10 hours of footage on YouTube. And one of her interviews, like right after this happened, it was like an hour long interview where she just came across as so absurdly self-absorbed. And even 20 years from now, 25 years later, 24 years later, she's on Oprah and she's asked, you know, to apologize to Nancy Kerrigan. What would she say now? I mean, it's just so easy to just, why don't you just say, I'm still very sorry.
Right.
I want to be forgiven. It's just such a simple thing. But she goes on and says, well, I'm very sorry that it happened. And, oh, by the way, like, she works in, I'm the first woman to ever do the triple axel.
Yeah.
Just still self-absorbed and still freaking weird about it.
She should run for president.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, I mean, she's an egomaniac.
I teased in the non-spoiler section that there was stuff coming to light now because it's an anniversary and stuff. But along those lines, it's 25 years later. She just now, there's an interview coming out about her with ABC that she did that's coming on, I think this one of the weekends coming up. It's like a 2020 special, and she just, for the first time, is admitting that she knew about something was going to happen to Nancy. And throughout this movie, she's, you know, even the character is like, I didn't know anything was going to happen.
Yes, perfect. She's now we're always, getting into the real story.
Yeah, she's always said, I didn't know anything was going to happen, and that's, it's sad.
Honestly, I can buy this take on it. Just combining.
Well, be specific, because there's so a billion
here's,
takes.
Here's the specific. Here's the specific.
I'm not cutting this.
Here's the specificity for you, Michael. Bobby Cannavale calls bullshit on both Tanya and Jeff's stories in the movie.
Yes.
That character, that hard copy reporter. He calls bullshit on Tanya's claims that she didn't know anything about.
Yeah, Cannavale's kind of the conscious. He's like the middleman.
When in fact, she is calling Nancy Kerrigan's friends and managers about her practice times,
where
about
and when.
Where she trains. That has been FBI fact now, right? So I really like that Bobby called bullshit on that. Jeff's stories, in my opinion, are total bullshit in terms of their marriage never having hit her. Like, it's on record. What's on record about Tanya Harding's life, it's on record that the coach was going to call Child Protective Services on the mother.
Right.
It's on record that the cops were called several times over on Jeff Galluli. It's on record, and it's very consistent, Tanya Harding's claims in the media when interviewed from the 80s all the way till now that she was abused mentally and physically.
Right.
And it makes sense to me, and I believe her in regards to those claims. I don't think I'm going off on a limb there. However, it does make sense to me that Jeff Galluli was not on the same page with these knuckleheads, Sean Ecker, et cetera, et cetera. And it does, I do buy the fact that maybe Jeff Galluli, the husband, would not have wanted to take this person out and break a bone or whatever, not break a bone, just injure her for the time being.
And maybe the I guy that, that thought he was an undercover agent would have taken it that far.
And I could buy the fact that Tanya didn't know it was going to be anything more than like letter writing or psychological warfare. Because why would Tanya Harding put it in these idiots, these obvious idiots' hands? Her career. Why would she put her career in their hands? Like, Jeff, it makes no sense. Like, she was not a dumb person ever. Even though she's not a well-educated person, she is a very smart person. To
and
me,
she's and she's obsessed with being a skater, a figure skater.
Right, and she's skating some of the best routines of her life at that point. Even if she's not going to beat Kerrigan at the Nationals, she's going to make the Olympic team. Even if she's not going to win the gold, she's has her better a better chance than ever at a medal. And it makes no sense to me that she would put and this something this big in the hands of people so stupid that have proven to be
take
so stupid
the real take the real Tanya Harding. What's her reaction when she's gone through the legal battle and she's allowed back on the Olympic team and allowed to skate at the Olympics? What's her reaction in real life in 1993, I think it was, or the beginning of 94, what's her reaction when she knows she's going to be in the Olympics and skating against Kerrigan? It's not like, oh, I hope I do well or we'll see what happens. It's, I'm going to kick her butt.
I'm going to whip her butt.
Yeah, I'm going to be there and I'm going to whip her butt. So it's not like she shies away from competition. It's not like she was scared of Nancy Kerrigan either. It makes you think that just with that being her natural inclination, yeah, maybe she was happy that something happened to Nancy Kerrigan deep down, but I'm with you. I think something went awry to the point where she was informed that something was going to go down and she wasn't really that concerned with it because she didn't think it would be anything major.
It makes sense to me that she would play some games with psychological warfare. Maybe she,
because she was playing psychological warfare with her mother her whole life. Maybe she thought it was normal too. To make an excuse for her, but
they mentioned it in the movie. It's not uncommon for skaters to like untie another person's skates to play those little games.
Did you
she
see
might have been doing that for years.
In the movie, when Jeff Galluli, when the cop comes and tells Tanya there's been a death threat, and Jeff Galluli's explaining to the cop, well, at this level, there's a lot of mental head games that are going on with figure skaters, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And the cop says, oh, I didn't realize that. Jeff Galluli's character stares right into the camera and goes, yeah, It's a well-known fact.
These people are, total knuckleheads in terms of how they just implicate themselves throughout the movie and throughout their interviews, honestly. You watch a ton of the interviews, and I would encourage people, like, this could be a fun deep dive on the side.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's audiobooks out there to listen to. I may grab one of those.
Because, again, I mean, you're not... You know, the heart of Bobby Cannavale calls them boobs, but like you're dealing with characters with depth or with layers, but they're not intellectually superior. I mean, certainly right. Sean and Jeff don't come off that way in real life in the interviews you've seen.
Yeah, I mean, they're a little more put together in the actual interviews, but they say a lot of the same quotes, right. Which was very cool to watch. Honestly, I think the third act coverage, it reminded me a lot of the 30 for 30. The 30 for 30, it takes a lot more of a on-high perspective, like from the media coverage perspective, I thought. I don't think they try to be
Which
more
could
objective.
Be why they did this
so
movie
So I want to watch that again, yeah. But this movie is very subjective, and for them to find any truth or any possible truth from that subjective point of view is fascinating to me. And this writer is not known... The screenwriter is not known for, true to life stories and adaptations. He's known for P.S. I Love You and Kate and Leopold. Right. And this dude found this true story.
He's
and
known
really,
for love stories, and he's able to write a story devoid of all love between a mother and a daughter.
He's written
and a tainted love between a husband and wife.
Yeah, he's written such formulaic nonsense. Yeah.
I mean,
he's had hit and misses. Kate and Leopold is nonsense by anybody's. So if you like that movie, it's nonsense. I'm sorry. It might be a guilty pleasure for some folks, but P.S. I Love You is beloved. Everybody is crazy about that movie. So that was a huge hit. And he's not known for writing these, adaptations of real life events for sure.
Just to backtrack a little bit, I think we'd be doing ourselves and our listeners a disservice if we didn't touch on two scenes. One, it's kind of a throwaway scene, but it was very, very funny to me when Sean is approached by the FBI in his parents' home. And this whole time, he's given off this impression that he believes in his mind he's this undercover agent and he's smarter than everyone. He has a quote that he's thinking four steps ahead of everybody. The CNN coverage, he loves it. He thinks it's the greatest thing in the world because he's finally a known name, basically. And he thinks it's this master plan coming together. And you're given the impression the whole time that this is just a doofus character that doesn't know when to stop. And the first thing, when his feet are held in an actual fire for the first time by the FBI agents, it takes him 2 seconds to give everything up.
Immediately gives it up. I love the flashbacks to him talking and bragging about the Tonya Harding.
Oh, my God.
All the people
in
the neighborhood and at the bar. I was laughing.
And it reminded me of me way too much because I have a big mouth and I can't keep a secret in my life. And I do the same thing. I didn't tell a soul. And then in my mind, I'm replaying every random stranger. Yeah, that was funny.
Makes me wonder what you've told people about me, Michael.
The other scene that I wanted to talk about, and it's one of the more emotional scenes, after the incidents happen and Tanya's on her own, she's dealing with the media in her front yard every day, and Allison Janney tries to make amends. Mm-hmm. Comes over as her mother, and for the first time after all this, the hardship and bullshit and the I didn't love you speeches and what do you expect?
Right.
She's finally there. Her mother's reaching out for her emotionally, basically saying, I have your back.
Says all the right things. Yeah. In her own way, right? She sells it. And they just set that scene up, too, with the amazing, my favorite scene at the diner where the mother seems to have finally had
little
that change
turn,
of heart.
Yep.
Where she shows, like, with Tanya not watching, Tanya's on TV, she shows, like, just really motherly concern.
So you buy in that maybe she's turned a corner, and then she says, hey, look, honey, sweetie. Just between you and me, did you do it?
Yeah.
And Tanya immediately frisks her like a TSA agent.
You thought she was going to be a friend in the foxhole.
And it turns out all she wanted was what everyone else wanted, which was to milk this girl for her own 2 cents. And that's kind of the sad reality of Tanya Harding's life. And you could see that. I mean, the movie ends. The fallout is she's banned from figure skating. She can't go back and skate competitively internationally or domestically. And so she has to figure out other ways to kind of make a living. And that'll take us to the
epilogue.
End of her,
and Tanya Harding, where she's at now. So she acted in one movie called Breakaway. And it was an action movie. And she never acted in a second. So I don't think she was very good in it. She had one performance in a singing quartet where it was a big concert and they bombed and they sound ridiculous.
Oh, my God. We don't know any songs.
Exactly. Mike, I keep quoting that same Family Guy obscure reference for you. Anyway, she also became a celebrity boxing character on a reality show, right? For one fight. And she went after Paula Jones, who she was going up against.
She was tough as nails. I remember I watched that.
She beat her up.
That was Manute Bol against William the Refrigerator Perry was the main event.
Well, dude, I mean,
it's like the number 10 fighting each other.
Paula Jones is just like barely putting her hands up. And Tonya Harding, with all her athleticism, is just laying into her with these big goofy-ass gloves, luckily for Paula Jones. But boxing people, obviously trying to make the money grab, but also people that sense, you know, this is a person that
it's so
is willing to do it.
Sad.
They on interviews, they're like, well, you can't teach somebody going after somebody else. You know, that's like a skill for boxing. Like, if you're that violent. So that she ended up fighting 6 fights. She was 3-3. She made some money with that for a while. She has been a decker, a car mechanic, a landscaper. She's done a lot of jobs. She currently lives in Washington, I want to say. There's like a 12-minute, for her 39th birthday, a 12-minute YouTube thing, which is pretty wild to watch, where she's got all these great friends in her hometown, where she goes to the skating rink once in a while, and she still goes out there and does all those big spinning jumps. Like, she's doing triple,
she was great.
Triple,
I mean,
axles.
She was no joke as a skater. She was the best.
39 years old, she's pulling them off, and she still gets people coming up to her, signing autographs. Like it's amazing, because she used to train at a mall, and everybody would just stop when she was training. Like, nobody would skate except her. She's training. Like, everybody's buying the same ice time, but they're just watching her and clapping when she lands
a
move.
This isn't,
it still happens to this day.
This isn't Michael Jordan, but this was like if Gary Payton or Karl Malone, who was the best for a short while, was told he can't play basketball anymore in his prime,
right,
and go find something else to do. It's sad. I think about it, I get sad, man.
Well, the question is, does her backing away into obscurity, yes, she's done Oprah, yes, she goes around circuits and makes some money for autographs, but she kind of backs away. She could have fought for her career in different ways a little more, in my opinion. I don't know. That's totally judgmental.
Yeah, this is
but
a woman.
Is that the sign of a guilty conscience? Is that the sign of she's more guilty than you say? I'm just asking
harsh.
That question. I don't. Maybe I'm harsh.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I believe
her in many different ways. But does that backing away, is that a psychological tell?
I don't know. To me, this is you know, and I know we're kind of off the movie now. We're talking about her post-skating life is talked on in the movie. It's touched on a lot. But you're left with the impression that she's a fighter. And obviously, she was literally a fighter. But I think this is just a case of what happens if you don't have a support system in place anywhere. And she didn't. You know, her husband was a domestic beater. Her mother, if she wasn't a domestic beater, was certainly a mental abuser. And we both said that she probably was, you know, it seemed like she was a physical abuser. It's a woman that lost her way, and then she kind of got twisted in the wind, found a little fame, and everybody that could milk their 2 cents out of her did so. And it's just sad to me, anyway. It's depressing. And, you know, you get the epilogue that says in the film that she's now a mother. She wants everyone to know she's a good mother, so hopefully that's true, and hopefully she's found purpose in life with her kid, and hopefully she's happy. I mean, this can't be easy to see yourself portrayed on film in this way.
I mean, the most well-adjusted people, when they're stars at a young age, when they have success at a young age, athletes in particular, we see it all the time as sports fans, they go wrong. So just imagine when these people from backgrounds where they're abused as kids, where they grow up and with arrested development, et cetera, how much easier it is for them to go down the wrong path. So it's sad to watch, especially as a coach of younger people. I work with young people every day, and it's very sad to watch that. But this was a fascinating movie for me. That I think the POV and the perspective is something to analyze for writers, and I can't believe that the writer of Kate and Leopold pulled off this balancing act.
Let's put a bow on this. What do you got a grade for this?
Listen,
movie?
This movie can jump up or down a couple of points.
I'm the exact same
throughout
way.
This award season,
and not like a couple points. It could jump 5 either way for me.
Right now, I do have it as a 90 A-minus.
Wow,
which is very strong for me. I'm bullish on it. I think the performances, the two leads, are plus points. I thought Sebastian Stan did a great job, and I enjoyed the hell out of it on 3 watches. So yes, it's flawed. I mentioned some of my flaws, but I did like it.
Yeah, I'm the same setup at least. I think I went a little a little too far the other way. I gave it an 86B. I could see me watching this two or three more times as we get into Oscar season and it becoming my favorite movie of the year. I could see me watching this two or three more times and just being outraged that they would have the balls to put a movie on screen that is based on a true story that didn't happen.
Right.
So I could go either way. I'm going to say 86B. Mike says 90A-. So either way, it's a high-quality movie. We both said it's a watch. You got to check it out. It's weird.
One of a kind. Yeah, it is one of a kind.
Yeah,
I will
one
say
of a
that.
Kind's a good way of putting it. Yeah. Better than weird. Yeah,
I haven't seen a movie that plays with those conventions in the same way. I'm very shocked.
So let us know what you think. Do you think we're right? Do you think we're wrong? Did you love this movie? Hate this movie? Reach out to us. Let us know. Mike and Oscar on Facebook. Mike and Oscar on Instagram. MMO_pod on Twitter. MikeMikeAndOscar@gmail.com. Hit us up. We love hearing your comments. We love reading your comments. We love telling everyone about your comments. And let us know either way what your thoughts on I, Tonya and any of the other Oscar sprint profiles were as we barrel down. Get ready for the Golden Globes this weekend. Get ready for Oscar nominations in a couple weeks. Critics' Choice and SAG Awards before that. And we're in it, man. We're in the throes of the sprint right now.
Getting these recorded, getting these released. Mike's doing a great job on the technical side. I'm trying to program things and get you guys all the backstory and the information, the juicy gossip where I can get it.
Yeah, on that, man, we're really busting our asses for you. And we enjoy doing it, and we hope you enjoy the product that we're putting out there. And if you do, you know, please spread the word. It would help us a great deal.
Tell a couple friends.
Yeah, if you listen to this and you told two people about it, three people about it, it would really help us out, and we'd truly appreciate it from the bottom of our hearts. But until then, we'll keep putting these out for you and get you ready for the Oscar season.
Keep listening.
And before we part, we have our always wise words. Reality sucks, Mike.
Watch movies with us.
That's right. We'll see you guys next time.